Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. Coming up, Toronto Sun's Joe Warmington dives into the heated feud between Hockey Night in Canada legends Ron McLean and Don Cherry. Plus, Chris Sims from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation breaks down Prime Minister Mark Carney's 103 conflicts of interest flagged by the Ethics Commissioner. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Wednesday, July the 16th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Not a pity we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
Ron McLean and Don Cherry were the faces of Hockey Night in Canada's Coach's Corner for over 30 years, with Cherry's fiery commentary balanced by McLean's calculated moderation. Their partnership was a cornerstone of Canadian hockey. It crumbled due to McLean's disloyalty during the so-called 2019 Poppygate incident. On Remembrance Day, November 11th, 2019, Cherry sparked controversy by supposedly criticizing immigrants for not wearing poppies, saying, quote, you people, you love our way of life, you love our milk and honey, at least you can pay a couple bucks for a poppy. McLean seemed to nod in agreement during the broadcast. Shortly thereafter, Rogers Sportsnet fired Don Cherry. After Cherry's firing, McLean then issued a public apology that distanced himself from Cherry's remarks, betraying his longtime colleague and fueling public outrage among fans who saw him as spineless. The rift deepened in July of this year when McLean, in a Kingston Whig Standard interview, smeared Cherry by falsely claiming he was hospitalized with pneumonia in Boston during the 2019 Stanley Cup Final and suggesting Cherry's comments were a deliberate exit strategy. Cherry denies these claims, calling McLean's story a lie, while Cherry's wife Luba has banned McLean from their home. Hockey icon Bobby Orr slammed McLean for his dishonesty. Under pressure, McLean recently visited Cherry's home in Mississauga to offer a weak apology for spreading falsehoods, but the damage was done. Cherry, hurt by McLean's repeated betrayals, seemed to make it clear their friendship was beyond repair, exposing McLean's role as the true villain in their storied partnership's collapse. Here with more is Toronto Sun columnist Joe Warmington. Hey, Joe, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Richard. It has been quite a dilemma. Interesting, as you were laying that out, the one thing that it starts with, you said about the comments about immigrants that was made in November of 2019. Of course, it never was about immigrants. People inferred that it was. And, you know, he talked about you come here, whatever it is, land of milk and honey, but he did not say immigrants. He did not specifically, he didn't even mean that. You know, we know what he meant. He meant everybody. He's talking about all the hipsters and every Canadian. And his point was that, you know, it's poppy time. He didn't see them anywhere. And he would like people, you know, the least you can do is to remember the fallen. So that was the number one misconception. And Rogers Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, and the rest, the left, all the cancel culture, they just dove on that. And they did a terrible pile-on an 85-year-old man by suggesting that he was being racial, racist, discriminatory, when all he was saying was something that Ron McLean agreed with at the time, and most viewers agreed with, which is, you know, around Remembrance Day, the least you can do is to wear a poppy to remember these freedoms and the life that we have. because there's people that didn't get to live through that. They sacrificed it. And you think back to, you know, our grandparents, in my case, my grandfather served over in World War II. Many people lost family there. Many families, there's so many people that were killed. And it is the least you can do. And that was his opinion. And so they fired him for that. They fired him on Remembrance Day for that, if you can imagine. I remember when they fired him, he phoned me. I was actually covering Remembrance Day. And the one thing that Don Cherry said to me was to make sure that I don't drop covering Remembrance Day to cover him being fired on Remembrance Day, just that. He didn't mind it as a separate, but not to, because I would have probably, you know, perhaps dropped what I was covering and did that. But so important to him that the veterans are honored. And so it's gross what they did, and it's even grosser what Ron McLean did.
Yeah, let's talk about his can you just sort of summarize what led to this? This was in the Kingston Whig Standard, I believe, this interview. What led to the, what did he say exactly?
Well, what he said, I think you did a good job of summarizing it, but what he said was he's trying to get the monkey off his back of why, you know, he's been taking a lot of heat for many years. People hate his guts. His ratings aren't what they were, but if they meet him, they don't want to meet him. And he senses all that. He's a bit of a pariah. He's a Judas. You know, he turned on his wingman. I mean, it's unconscionable to do that. If Don had done something really wrong, it's one thing, committed a crime, it's another thing. He knows what he meant. They said that the year before, and the year before that, and the year before that. That's why Ron McLean said, that's why we love you, because he knew what he meant. And so he just was getting the heat, and he was told, you're with us or you're with him, and he took us. I get it, $1 million a year. I wouldn't want to be in a situation where someone said, you can go with the guy we're firing, or you can lose the $1 million a year and go with them if you want. But he had the power to say no, and it's eating him up, Richard, for all these years. And he knows what he did. He knows that he was prepared to throw his partner literally under a bus and around, you know, say, go get him kind of thing. And that's what happened. It was horrible what he did. So he was trying to change the narrative in this interview, which is a Post Media interview. I work for Post Media. Ran in the Kingston Whig Standard, which is adding insult to injury because that's Don's hometown. You know, this yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of his daughter Cindy dying. His brother Richard just died in the spring. And so, you know, it's just a horrible set of circumstances that happened. And anyway, so, you know, that's what he did, and it backfired on him. And people went, wait a minute, this isn't true. He wasn't in a Boston hospital. Now, what I was amazed at, Richard, is how nobody called to check with him. I mean, that's basic journalism. I mean, we're reporters. If you have something about somebody, you call them. And if they don't call you back, okay, then you say, well, they didn't call back to confirm or deny. No one checked with, you know, Don. It wasn't hard to do. He's got email. He's got social media. Everybody in the media has his number or his son's number.
Right. And McLean also tried to paint this sad portrait of Don, that he's alone, he doesn't have any friends, and so forth. I mean, where did that come from?
You know, it's delusional thinking. Ron McLean decided that he was the star of Coach's Corner, and he was the star of Hockey Night in Canada, and not a weatherman from Red Deer that rode the coattails of Don Cherry to end up getting to where he got to making $1 million a year, which most people in media certainly don't make. He got there on Don Cherry's coattails. And as a result, it bothered him. And he decided that he was the star of it. And that, you know, him to say that Don Cherry doesn't have many friends. I mean, it's a crazy thing to say. And as I said in my tweet about that, he's got millions of friends. Got a lot more friends than you have, Judas. And that's exactly what Ron was. Now, I know you're going to get to it, but, you know, Ron knows he was wrong, and he went over, even though Don said he's not welcome at his house, just like he did for his birthday.
That was Ron, he showed up uninvited on his 90th birthday, and Ron or Don seemed a little uncomfortable with that whole situation.
And then he showed up to say he was sorry here, and Don's not ready to forgive him yet. Like in any kind of a disagreement with someone you're close to, whether it's a wife or a husband or whatever, it takes time sometimes to heal. I think the first step is an apology, and I'm sure that Don would get there, but you know, he's tired of being pushed away. He is almost 92. I mean, he'll be 92 in February. And, you know, he is a national icon, you know, Canadian treasure. He has been very badly maligned. I mean, he had his career taken from him. He made $1 million a year. That was stolen from him, too. I mean, it's not just the thing. I mean, that's how he made his living. Mm. Even though he's 85, he'd made some money. He doesn't live big, but that's what he was making on there. That was taken from him. So, you know, it's pretty bad what Ron did. But I thought it was a first step. I don't want – a lot of people want Ron fired from Hockey Canada. I'm not saying that, and Don hasn't said that. But what we'd like him to do is to apologize publicly for this and also apologize for 2019 for not standing up for him and admitting that he blew it and that he didn't have the – you know, I'm trying to think of the right word, the man parts to stand up and to stick up for his friend. He could have done it. He had the power to do it. Yeah, there's a little bit of risk, but there's no way that right. he could have led that. But he didn't care about that. And so he's got to do those things. And then, as I said, Rogers Sportsnet should reinstate Don, just like they did with renaming the stadium and Rob Ford. They can go back and try to fix it or eventually putting Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. It's too late for Pete to see it, but people are talking about that now. They should do that now. Well, they can't. Well, Don's still here. And then, you know, there's lots of debate over whether he should be given the Order of Canada. Of course, he should. There's no one more Canadian than Don.
I agree.
And then the Hall of Fame for hockey. I mean, again, who's more famous in hockey than Don Cherry? I'm told to go, you know, tread lightly on that. Because, you know, if we pound them too hard, that's a really special, unique little club. There are a lot of people that we feel should be in the Hall of Fame. The more you push them, the worse it is. So we'll let them figure that out. I think, you know, my personal opinion is I would like him in there. I don't know what category you put him in, whether it's broadcast or whether you put him in as a builder, but you put him in there. Hopefully it happens. But, you know, again, I don't want to push anybody, Mr. Batman, whatever. I'm not criticizing. You know, you have your criteria, and it's a great debate. But the Order of Canada, you know, you think about it, Richard, when it comes to the troops, you know, Canadian military, every time any of them fell, it was appointment. You know, Coach's Corner was appointment television anyway. Even at 85 when, you know, he wasn't quite as zipping as he was at 60 or at 50, you still tuned in because he did the right thing. He was Canadian. He was standing up for Canadian values and Canadian people that were putting their lives on the line in places like Afghanistan. He stuck up for, you know, all the regular working stiff. That's who Don Cherry is. That's what he came from, those roots. He came out of Kingston, and, you know, he never lost those, you know, that kind of Kingston mentality, which is a blue-collar, hard-working, you know, good quality Canadian people. And there's nothing wrong with having a beer on the weekend and working for your family. And he supported the police. And, you know, I support the police, but I mean, I'm a critic at times and I write things when I don't like what they've done. And I'll say that. And boy, he would call me and give me hell for that. I mean, police are the police for him.
Let me jump in here, Joe, because you
took him off.
You mentioned he would call you and give you hell. I mean, you have a special relationship with Don Cherry. You visit with him regularly. You post videos on the Toronto Sun website and so forth. Just go back to 2 days ago, well, July 13th, when Ron McLean showed up at his house to issue an apology. How did that go? I mean, can you paint kind of a picture? What did Don tell you about that?
He just said he ignored him. I mean, it sounded frosty. I mean, I saw Ron McLean had made a comment that he had apologized to Don personally, and he said that in the Toronto Star. I'm not going to quote out of the Toronto Star, so I went to Don, and Don called me back and said, yeah, he did come over, but he didn't say he accepted the apology. I don't want to make it worse. I mean, you know, I don't know exactly. It was frosty, but it was a first step. I think it was good that Ron acknowledged it. Ron is not, you know, a tell of the hunt or anything like that. He's a guy that's gone. It's gone to his head. He's become bigger than Don and bigger than everybody. And he's forgotten and he needs to be reminded that, no, you're not the star of the show. The star of the show is Don Cherry. And he's the victim of this Machiavellian move to, you know, prop yourself up over it, to you know, kind of push away the heat, which could have come to him too, because he's the moderator. Like you and I talking here now, Richard, if I say something offside, you've got to deal with that. And you will deal with it. And I've been on your show for, you know, for 30 years. I've been on radio shows that you either hosted or produced, and we've had disagreements, and you manage that as a professional host. Ron didn't do that. He did not take that ownership. I mean, you tell me, you were there, you watched it. What do you think? You run shows. Did Ron handle that well?
No, I mean, it was unconscionable what he did, particularly in light of the fact that at one time, earlier the roles were reversed, and it was Ron McLean who was on the outs, and Don Cherry stood up for him and got him reinstated. People forget that.
Well, I don't forget it because I was the guy that, you know, that quoted, we put together that plan to get Ron back. And it included Canadians signing a petition. I talked to Ron during that time and told him we're going to get his job back. And Ron, at that time, you know, he was holding up for more money. That was the issue. He felt that he was underpaid. And, you know, I didn't disagree with that. But I think, as I reminded him, we're all underpaid. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, because you're on television or radio. And people recognize you when you go to the store. And in his case, you and I cover serious stuff like politics and the kid that gets hit by the drunk driver or the shootings and all the horrible stuff that goes on in the world. It's not exactly fun for us. He's covering hockey. So people see people like that in a store or a bar or a restaurant or in the neighborhood. They're excited to meet them because it's a happy time for them. That's their recreation. And he forgot that. But he got it back quickly, and I think he did a good job. He deserved that money, and it was Don Cherry who did not. He could have easily said, at that time, he could have said, look, I don't care, you know, give the money to me. He didn't do that. And then later, when they did actually, that was the first time they went after Ron. Then they went after him again, and they replaced him with George Strombolopoulos on Hockey Night in Canada. And, you know, if I ever see George again, and I knew George even before he was known, he was a producer in radio. You knew him too.
Yeah, he was a board op at the Fan 590.
Right. And he always had something special about him, and I knew he was going to go places, and I'm so proud that he did. And I'm actually embarrassed about how I didn't really treat him all that well, because I felt that he was kind of honing in on Ron's job. And, you know, I didn't. I wasn't really a fan of that move, and I articulated that. In retrospect, you know, we have regrets of things we write or have said, opinions, and that's one of them. And if I ever see George Strombolopoulos again, I will personally apologize to him. I always hope to see him. I used to see him sometimes when I used to travel more in airports. He would be often going to L.A. or whatever, and I would see him. Many times we're down at a hockey game, things like that. We don't do a lot of that now. But and what I have to say about that is the reason I would apologize to him is because I think he was badly treated by Hockey Night in Canada, and I think that was because of the Ron issue. Don Cherry kept Ron McLean alive in that scenario, in that he wouldn't do Coach's Corner with Strombo. If he'd done Coach's Corner with Strombo, they would have had a new audience. Strombo would have changed the dynamic of it. It may have worked. It may not have worked. I think with Strombo's talent, it probably would have worked. He's a great talent, as you know. And that would have maybe helped Don, too. It would have been a new dynamic. But instead, he said, I'm only doing that with McLean. So that kept McLean with some sort of foothold in the Hockey Night in Canada, which he didn't have. He would have been out and forgotten about. So when things went south for Strombo, which wasn't fair, you know, he didn't really get a fair shot. I think having Ron McLean still around that show killed Strombo. And I think a lot of us helped with that. And it was wrong what we did. I didn't do anything over the top or anything, but I didn't support him. I didn't treat him like a new young hot talent. I treated him as some sort of guy that was trying to move Ron out. Yeah,
an interloper. And, well, you had prior loyalties to Ron McLean and Don Cherry, so that's fair.
I still have great respect and affection for Ron and what he's done. And I still think, and I always think, that you can fix these things. I mean, I try to write that all the time. I try to get Elon Musk and Trump to patch that nonsense up. But, you know, sometimes you can't do it. And, you know, I'm not supposed to to be an arbiter or arbitrator of these things, but I'm a human being and I like to see people getting along and not fighting.
Of course.
It might be a bit of a character flaw, but in retrospect, McClane knows that he blew this thing. He's got to look in the mirror and go, you know what? I destroyed Don Cherry's legacy by not standing up for him. He didn't do anything wrong. He never said anything wrong.
No.
He never once, you know, like you could disagree when, like, I don't think that Don, you know, he didn't like Alexander Ovechkin in the beginning. Well, he's now the all-time goal scorer. So, you know, again, but he grew to like Ovechkin, and that was because of Ovechkin. Ovechkin liked Don Cherry, even though he was critical. That's the kind of guy Ovechkin is. But you remember, Don Cherry didn't like Crosby either, or Lemieux in the beginning, and many other people. Yeah. John Cherry's attitude is you play, you go up and down, you drop the gloves, you play lunch, you know, like he loved Bobby Orr because Bobby Orr is the complete player.
Yeah.
Scores off, team guy, you want to drop the gloves, okay.
That must have been very gratifying for Don Cherry when Bobby Orr came to his defense recently. Did he talk to you about that?
Well, Bobby stays in regular touch with them. It does mean a lot to him. Bobby doesn't have to do that, but Bobby's always stuck up for Graves. Bobby Orr is another guy that, you know, he was badly abused by the same leftist crowd, the same crowd that went after Wayne Gretzky too.
Right, right.
This year for the Trump thing. Like that pack, that pack of sports writers, you know, like that's an easy job. You go down there, it's nice and, you know, all the people that are in the game are, you know, given, you get access to them. They give you all their stats, how to spell their names. You get a Haagen-Dazs ice cream still at the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's nice, warm place to sit. In news, which we work in, you're getting beat up. You're getting pushed by a police officer. Get over there. Someone's hitting you with a broom if you knock on a door. It's not exactly friendly.
No, so it's not glamorous. No.
They don't have a perspective at all.
Joe, last two quick questions. Number one is, you mentioned that Don Cherry should be reinstated. I mean, is he up for that? What are you imagining? Maybe one last, have him on for one last show to say, you know, thanks and goodbye? What do you have in mind? Or what would he like to do?
Well, I don't know what he would like to do. And I would never speak for Don Cherry ever. But what I would like to see happen is do what I've done. If you go on to TorontoSun.com or Google in Cherry's Corner, Joe Warmington, Don Cherry, you will see numerous times that I've gone and done Coach's Corner there at his house, just in his front, you know, he has his front section that he sits in. And if you, you know, and you mentioned about a special relationship with Don Cherry. That's not true. I don't have a special relationship with him. I have the same relationship with him as I have with you or with, you know, any of the media people that I deal with. I have his phone number. I call him. There's no guarantee he'll call me back. He does call me back. If he doesn't like something I wrote, he'll tell me that. If he likes it, he'll tell me that. Most of the time, he will let me come and visit and interview him. Sometimes he says no. You know, it's volatile at times because he doesn't agree with everything I write and say. You know, I'm way, like, you know, I am conservative columnist, but I'm pretty liberal on many things. And, you know, that he doesn't always agree with that, especially if I criticize the police. And I do that. That's part of my job to do that. But that doesn't mean I don't love the police. Of course I do. Even with Bill Blair during the G20, when I was so critical of the G20 back in 2010, you know, Bill Blair, it was hard to go after him the way I did. And we're still friendly today. It's a very professional relationship. I still get along very well with Bill Blair, and he will seek me out. When he was a cabinet minister, he would come right over and say hello to me. And I think that that's the way I approach it, and I know you approach it the same way. You can barb with people, but I learned from Bob McDonald and Peter Worthington, the two greats, a little bit from Christy Blatchford as well, is you don't leave a bruise on people. You know, you can bench them or criticize them, but don't leave a big black eye on their eye, because that everyone, you don't embarrass them, right? And that's what I do. So that relationship is good with Don because of that style. As for what he should do, Ron McClane should go with the camera crew. One camera, one sound guy, one lighting guy, sit in that same veranda and just have a chat for 10 minutes about everything and air that on Hockey Night in Canada, and it's over. I don't think that Don should have to go in the studio, but I think Don would go for that. But I can't speak for him. You know, he is almost 92. the thing people say, well, he seems frail, and people thought that he signed off on the podcast, which he didn't. He just says
that. Yeah, that was my last question about the podcast. Yeah. But yeah, what? How is he? How is he? His health?
No, he's fine. I mean, he's 91, so that's the number one thing. He's just as sharp as he always was. It just doesn't come across. I mean, he gets, as Bobby Orr said, he gets tired, in a different way. But I can tell you, and I said this to Don, and Don agreed with me. When I talked to Don Cherry at his house, he's Don Cherry for about 10 minutes there. And then after that, Coach's Corner was 6 minutes. I mean, so that he's got 6 minutes in him. It's just that after a while, he's 91 and the lights are on and you get tired of it. He's fine. You just got to warm him up. And as I said, I know for a fact that I do a daily column in the Toronto Sun. It is not easy and it's very difficult. And I never know what I'm going to be doing. You do all your radio and your TV shows and different things you've done all these years. If you don't have to do it and next week you're not doing it, you're not able to do it. The only reason that you do it is because that's what you do. It's like a hockey player. They get out of bed in the morning. They don't feel like playing at Maple Leaf Gar- or at Scotiabank Arena that night. But by the time they have their coffee and they go to the therapist and they get their whatever's bothering them, they're all hurt. I mean, talking to Gretzky, Gilmore, Bobby Orr, I mean, it sounds like I'm name dropping, but I do talk to all those people. And they all tell me that you don't talk about other players' health. And Ron, Ron knows that he shouldn't have done it. He's apologized to the Toronto Star for that, not to us or publicly, but we've reported what he told the Toronto Star, is that he knows that he crossed the line there. You don't talk about each other's health. Nobody is, everyone's human, and everyone's got something bothering them, whether it's their eyes or whether it's something with their kids or as I said, Don has had a tough year losing his daughter and his brother. Mm-hmm. So it was wrong what happened, but no, Don is fine. He can do it. He could probably do your podcast. I don't think that he will do it, but you have to kind of go. I know when Jerry Agar called me a month ago and he said, I'd love to have Don on. I said, okay, here's how you do it. You got to go in hot. You got to call him and gets on the phone and you go right into the interview and roll tape. Because if you try to set it up and you try to do that, it's not going to happen. But once you get him going, it's the Don Cherry that you love or didn't love if you don't like his opinion. I think the guy's the greatest Canadian. I really do. He was voted seventh greatest Canadian. I don't care whether I don't agree with everything anybody says. You shouldn't. That's not healthy. Then you're in a cult. But I do agree with, the Canadiana side of Don Cherry. I do. And I do agree with the style of hockey. Look at the Florida Panthers won the cup 2 years in a row. That's Don Cherry, Boston Bruins style hockey. That's what wins. So the guy's right on a lot of stuff. He should have that Order of Canada for everything that he's done. Mm-hmm. You remember when they were going to give him an honor at down at RMC in Kingston? And some, professor there, went crazy and made it impossible for him to go. They were going to protest. He didn't bother going. Well, why is that? I mean, he's earned that. His grandfather worked there. I mean, that was a big honor for him. I hope we see the Order of Canada. We've got, there's a lot of criticism of Prime Minister Mark Carney, but the one thing that he has done well, I think, is he's brought Canada a little bit back compared to blackface of Justin Trudeau, who hated Canada, hated Canadians. You don't get that from Carney. He brought the king here, and he's trying his best to do things. You may disagree with how he's doing it, and certainly some sneaky stuff. I get all the political stuff, and I pointed it out, and I will continue to point it out. But I do appreciate the Canadiana of Carney, and I think that's why I do think that Order of Canada is possible. Harper should have pushed. I know that they say that the Prime Minister doesn't help, but don't tell me they don't have a little bit of a sway.
Exactly. Let's hope they do that. And Don, you're right. Don Cherry deserves the Order of Canada. Let's be honest. The clock is ticking. Let's hope they do it soon before it's too late.
Ron McLean can help with that.
Yes, he could.
Ron will be watching this right here, and it'll be all over the internet. And others can see it. you know, Mr. Bettman and all that stuff. And I think that your point there is they were all friends with Don Cherry, and they all rode awfully high with him, including Mr. Bettman. And by the way, you know, Mr. Bettman and all the other names I mentioned, these are all good people, whether it's, you know, Mr. Gretzky, Mr. Rohr, all of them. These are really, really good people, and they are. And yeah, they're high profile, and they're going to, you know, whatever, but they are the people that have, in our generation, have done a lot, and they're, you know, they're quality people, and they'll do the right thing. When you've got people that hate Canada, they're doing the wrong thing. And I do blame Trudeau. I mean, you know, Trudeau was fine in the first year or two, but after that, you know, he basically turned being Canadian into being some sort of a, you know, like a skunk or something. And there's a lot of damage that that guy did to the country. And the fact is that Don Cherry is the main collateral damage of that. But the rest of us are too, as we can't afford to live day to day.
Right.
Don Cherry is the guy who represents all of us, the working class person. And that includes white and blue collar. That's why he's loved coast to coast. And
100%.
Some people with him, but mostly people that hate Canada.
100%. He's a national treasure, and he deserved to be honored. Joe Warmington, Toronto Sun. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate your time.
Great to be with you. You have a great rest of the summer.
Prime Minister Mark Carney, Canada's self-styled economic guru, has been saddled with a conflict of interest screen that's about as watertight as a paper bag. His deep ties to Brookfield Asset Management, Stripe, Alphabet, Google's parent company, and a sprawling 103-company empire scream potential for abuse. And this flimsy screen hardly inspires confidence that he won't steer public funds toward his old corporate pals. Carney's campaign claim of owning just cash and personal real estate was a brazen lie, conveniently glossing over his vast web of investments in everything from clean energy to real estate. His so-called blind trust? More like a wink and a nudge deal, with Carney hand-picking his trustee to keep a leash on his assets while he pulls strings from the shadows. Governing without tripping over his own financial entanglements will be a tightrope walk, and his chief of staff and privy council clerk are stuck playing cleanup crew. After peddling such a whopper during the election, Carney's assurances of integrity ring hollow, leaving public trust dangling by a very thin thread. Here with more is Chris Sims, Alberta Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Hey, Chris, welcome back.
Richard, I'm so excited to be on your show. I'm doing very well.
All right. So this is what I don't understand, how Mark Carney can just brush all of these conflicts of interest off and expect taxpayers to trust him when he claimed on the campaign trail his investments were only cash and real estate. He said that, cash and real estate. You know, look within yourself, he told one of the reporters. You're starting from a place of distrust. Well, that was certainly called for, distrust. He's hiding millions in Brookfield and Stripe stock options. How are we supposed to trust this guy?
This is such a big problem, Richard, and it touches on taxpayers' money and big time on accountability. Now, let's rewind to the election, because I think that this really requires more examination. Unfortunately, you and I have been in the game for a while, and you've probably noticed it too. During an election campaign, I find the national media kind of gets in this weird form of thinking. It's almost like the fog of war. But it's the fog of an election, and they kind of hurriedly push past things each time. And it's like, okay, nothing to see here, elbows up. Okay, nothing to see here, orange man bad, Donald Trump. It's like, no, wait a minute. What you just said there was denying that you have potential conflicts of interest if you are elected prime minister. Now, to be completely fair, I don't think I'm on Rosemary Barton's Christmas card list, to put it nicely. Okay, she's, for folks who don't watch mainstream media anymore, I understand, she's still one of the anchors at CBC. To her credit, She asked Mark Carney on the campaign trail about potential conflicts of interest. And that's exactly what Richard was just referring to there. Look inside yourself. That was his chippy, I would say cagey, snotty answer when she asked him, do you have conflicts of interest? He made it sound as if that was the stupidest, most absurd question ever. Like, it's not even in the ballpark. And look inside yourself, Rosemary. And then he again stonewalled other senior reporters after that. And again, I'm not carrying water for the mainstream media, but they were doing their job there. The issue here, Richard, I think, is in the hubbub of an election, they stop doing their job. They'll ask the initial question, and then for whatever reason, it just goes Teflon after that, and some dumb slogan is allowed to replace a real answer. Unfortunately now, after the election, we're getting a real answer, and that is the Ethics Commissioner, which is an official office within the Parliament of Canada. It has its own website. I've scrolled through the list, has found 103 conflicts, to the point where there's going to have to be a special screen set up between the Prime Minister and these 103 conflicts. It's brutal.
How is the screen intended to work? I mean, again, this blind trust. When Carney himself appointed the person who would oversee this blind trust, who would report to him, that's not a blind trust. So how is this screen now supposed to work? And should we trust that?
Great question. So they're still working out the details, I would estimate here, because I would go out on a limb here and say that this is probably one of the situations where they've had the highest number of conflicts. So back, if you're old enough to remember, back when Prime Minister Paul Martin became Prime Minister, there was an issue with him having, you know, holdings in shipping companies, et cetera, et cetera. That was all front page news in major newspapers for like weeks and weeks and weeks and months, to the point where people probably remember it. It's a muscle memory. Now they're going to have to go through all these 103. So my guess is they're going to have staff within the Ethics Commissioner's office, within the Information Commissioner. They're going to have to go and have a meeting with all the ATIP people, access to information request type folks. And they're all going to have to sit down with the pointy heads at Privy Council. So for folks, again, to remember, we've got elected government. So that's Prime Minister Mark Carney and his political staff. That's the Prime Minister's office, or PMO. Adjacent to that is permanent government. A lot of your listeners might call that the swamp, affectionately. That's permanent government. In the PMO's case, that's called the Privy Council Office, or PCO. There's going to be a layer of staffers in that PCO who then filter stuff through to the PMO. I'm envisioning removing names, a lot of redactions, a lot of careful meetings and briefings going on with the Prime Minister before any agreements are signed on to. The issue here, though, Richard, is, again, it can't be completely blind or ineffectual, because as a human being, he still has rights to have stock and all that other stuff and interest in things. But as Prime Minister, he's going to be making decisions about stuff like pipelines and clean energy, so to speak, or EVs. And
right, which suspiciously mirror, you mentioned like the energy superpower agenda, that suspiciously mirrors Brookfield's renewable energy investments that he once led and he still owns options in. I mean, short of totally divesting himself of those, and I don't know how easy that is because it's not just stock, there are stock options and so forth. You can't just, it's not as simple as just selling them. How is he going to govern?
This is a great question. I keep getting this image in my mind of him like with earmuffs on and leaving the room all the time. And again, 103 direct conflicts, to the point where, again, they had to publish it like this. I encourage everybody to go to the parliamentary website and find this list. I can send you the link later after the show, and scroll down. Again, those are direct conflicts of interest that he's going to have to recuse himself from. So what that looks like is they're all sitting around having an in-camera, meaning private cabinet meeting, and they start talking about stuff, and the boss gets up and leaves. 103 different situations he's going to have to do that we know of. So again, it's important to understand that people can have lives before they become politicians. We get that. The dude who's the head of the Bank of England. He was also the head of Bank of Canada. Clearly has a lot of dough. Big time education. Lots of connections. Big network. We get all that, right? They aren't just decanted fresh to become prime minister. The issue here is the accountability and being upfront about it before. Before. Canadians should have been able to make a decision on which way to vote that included this information. They might have still voted for him, but they needed to know. And to have them so cavalierly dismissed of nothing to see here, move on, elbows up, look inside yourself, it's an insult to accountability.
Sie wollen endlich durchstarten und planen den nächsten Investitionsschritt? Dann setzen Sie auf den Sachsenkredit Universal der Sächsischen Aufbaubank. Mit einem Tilgungszuschuss von bis zu 10% für KMU, Existenzgründer, Freiberufler, große privatgeführte Unternehmen sowie Ärzte und Apotheker im ländlichen Raum. Für Investitionen bis zu 20 Millionen Euro. Mit erleichtertem Zugang zur Förderung. Alle Infos online unter sab.sachsen.de/sachsenkredit-universal.
Well, another example. We mentioned pipelines. Mark Carney, championed nuclear energy on the campaign trail, which is tied to Brookfield's Westinghouse. He mentioned Westinghouse by name in the debates, I think. Again, he holds interest in Brookfield's, which holds interest in Westinghouse. How is he going to, again, govern or propose policy with regard to nuclear energy in this country without it reeking of self-interest?
And this is critical. What you just zeroed in on there is so pertinent because right now, government law is dictating that they are going to ban the sale of normal gasoline and diesel powered vehicles. Like starting in 5 months' time, 20% of new car sales are going to have to be these battery powered cars. Okay. This is not just something happening in 10 years. No. It is going to have a direct impact on your vehicle market, your right to purchase what kind of car you want, like soon, in months' time. The issue here, Richard, exactly to your point, is where do we get the energy from to power these cars? The very basic math, say that Santa Claus or Gandalf magically changed all of the cars that we own right now. So our personal fleet of vehicles, whatever you've got in your driveway or garage, bingo. They're magically battery powered. They're magically electricity. We would need 14 new CANDU nuclear reactors just to power those cars, not counting new cars. That is an astonishing amount of energy, to your point exactly. What happens if the Prime Minister keeps this dumb law? We hope he scraps it. And then we start building nuclear reactors. Which company gets the bid? Which company gets the contract? These are all really tangled up questions. And again, is it ethical to force him to sell off everything? Well, does he have a life after being prime minister? These are all good questions. But the point again is that he should have been upfront and journalists should have chased him down like a pack of hounds and kept asking him these questions during the election. They shouldn't have taken that glib, cagey, dismissive answer as an answer and moved on. But that's exactly what happened during the election. And now we're facing these conflicts. Remember too, heat pumps. What about heat pumps? Mm-hmm. In Atlantic Canada, they're trying to force so many people to use heat pumps as their primary source of heat. Again, if you want to use that in the shoulder seasons, a lot of people like them. But in many cases, insurance companies won't even insure your home if you try to use just an electric heat pump as your primary source of heat. Again, does he have any connections to those companies? There's so many things the government sticks its fingers into in our personal everyday lives that he's going to have a connection to, like business-wise. So this is a mess, Richard.
And that just covers one area, like stocks and stock options in Brookfield. I think he owns something like stocks in something like over 500 companies. So we've just touched on energy, you know, never mind his stake in Stripe and so many other companies. But what does this say about our system that tolerates such divided loyalties? That a prime minister or a cabinet minister or an MP, anyone who votes in the House of Commons, can have this conflict of interest?
I think it speaks volumes about how far we have fallen from the days of the Accountability Act. So if I can tell a little story, I was working on Parliament Hill with mainstream media. I remember the sponsorship scandal. I remember what's called ad scam. For your younger listeners and viewers, thank you so much for listening to independent media. Keep sharing this show, okay? Keep on this because we need you listening to this and spreading the word. For our younger viewers and listeners, what happened was basically this. We had a near-death experience with the Quebec referendum. Quebec almost voted to separate. The feds panicked and said, let's dump a whole bunch of we're sorry, sorry, sorry money into Quebec. Unfortunately, that also took the form of literally brown paper bags full of cash, where they were seeing basically the Government of Canada logo. It looks so benign, showing up at big events. The problem here is that there was a lot of taxpayers' money flowing out the door without any receipts. It was often referred to as ad scam or the sponsorship scandal. It brought down the Cretchen-Martin government, okay? In the echo of that, Prime Minister Stephen Harper took over, and he passed what is called the Accountability Act that included things like, if you're a political staffer, you're not allowed to be considered for even a bureaucrat job, run-of-the-mill bureaucrat job at any higher level, like serious levels of that. I'll give you an example. When I was a staffer on Parliament Hill, Richard, somebody from the Ethics Commissioner's office gave us all a briefing, like communication staff, and said directly, don't go for coffee with a journalist and accidentally take their pen with you because I will consider that a gift. I'm not kidding. That is what they said. People might remember then Cabinet Minister Bev Oda, who ordered a $16 glass of orange juice and kind of wanted a different hotel. People had kittens over that, like freaked out. That was the level of the Accountability Act then. Now we've got this ridiculousness. ArriveCan. Look at the ArriveCan app. That app that didn't work. It was a huge imposition on our ability to move around. And it costs so much. That app on your phone should have cost around $250,000 to create. The government blew more than $60 million on it. And they don't have half the receipts.
And they won't name the names. They won't release the names of the people who profited from that.
Thank you. And I don't care if it's red team or blue team, okay? The red team of the Cretchen Liberals took over from the Mulroney team, which had its own problems with Airbus and had its own problems with accountability. My point here is that we went from like psychoanalyzing everybody's orange juice receipts and being really careful about where our pens went to this. So this does not help taxpayers because all it does is it erodes trust in government because there's a lack of accountability. It actually leads to a form of like nihilism and despair, which is depressing. And two, fundamentally, it wastes taxpayers' money. And that is one of the reasons why we are at record debt, $1.2 trillion. And we have got to get this train stopped. We must. And it should start right now. It should start with Prime Minister Mark Carney really owning this. The fact that he's got 103 conflicts.
So what is the answer? Pierre Poilievre is demanding that he sell his assets. Again, as I said, it's not that simple. Maybe it is. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, what is that the answer? Or, you know, what should be done? How do we fix this problem? What happened to the Accountability Act? Why can't we go back to that?
Well, it still exists. They're just not adhering to it. Like there's some cases, Richard, where a department. So for example, like a national capital commission or like a bridges department, things like that, right? National film board. And I'm just using them as an example. It may not be the case in their specific instances, but for the longest time they had requirements for proactive disclosure. And that is where they list every single fiscal quarter, where they went, how much they spent, hospitality costs, etc. And just from experience of going to these different websites of departments, that fell off, and especially fell off during the lockdown, where they're like, yeah, we're not posting it anymore. So it's just a lackadaisical attitude to the rules that are still technically on the books. So I would do a few things. I would recommend that the government send through a diktat of every single nickel, every single pen is going to be accounted for. This has to be your focus of being accountable. We don't care what department you're in, agriculture, fish, whatever. You have got to be accountable with every nickel. That starts at the PMO. So like radical transparency at the PMO. We'd like to see a little bit of chagrin saying, yeah, you know, we should have been more clear during the election. Sorry about that. Going forward, we're going to count for every nickel. To your point on selling off everything, we don't know. Taxpayers Federation, we're not really great at, you know, being a financial advisor, investment banker type person, but we do know where the money's going and we need to know where it's going. So I would do those things. I would make sure that you tell your member of parliament, folks listening, you want radical accountability, radical transparency, proactive disclosure from the lowest MP all the way up to the prime minister. Demand that. And second, this is really critical, and I think especially for shows like this, and I so deeply appreciate it as a longtime journalist. Tell your friends to support independent media, because it was independent journalists who were screaming about this through X, through Substack, through YouTube, through shows like this for weeks and weeks and weeks during the election. And it only bobbed to the surface those couple of times with mainstream media, and it was dismissed. And now we have a situation where a prime minister has 103 different conflicts and everybody in the media is supposedly surprised. They should not be surprised, because independent journalists were trying to kick at the darkness till it bled daylight during the entire election. But it's only surfacing now, and that's not okay. So I would give an assignment to your viewers. Share this. Get on alternative media and demand more accountability through your journalism.
Taxpayer.com. That's the website for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Great petitions there. You can sign up for the weekly newsletter and also a terrific newsroom, some great stories. What am I missing, Chris? Are there any petitions in the works regarding the conflict of interest here?
Yeah, Franco's working on one right now on along the lines of accountability, because again, we stand for lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government is our mantra. And so this is not a great example of accountable government. It's kind of an after the fact accountability of oopsie after an election. So we're working up a petition there. Ultimately, what we're just begging and pleading everybody to focus on is cut spending. Cut spending, because we cannot afford to continue this route that we're on right now. Carney is literally planning on spending more money than Justin Trudeau. Like, that should be thunder striking to everybody listening, because eventually the creditors are going to say no. And we do not want to get into that situation. I told a little story about Paul Martin back in the day in the 90s. Folks in Saskatchewan, they got to the point with their debt crisis, they had to close more than 50 community hospitals. 50.
Wow.
In a tiny province. Like, picture that. Picture what that would do to your town, your community, your parents who are aging in care, to you not being able to have a baby in your hometown. We do not want to be in that situation again. So I would, again, the main message we're sending is cut spending, fight the debt.
Chris Sims, Alberta Director for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Again, taxpayer.com. Chris, thanks for everything you do.
Thank you, Richard.
Hey, that's it for me. I'll speak with you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.